My name is Alita Price, and I'm doing my second interview with Mary Magdalene Holloway on March the 4th, 1974.
If you wanted to, you could say a little bit about your mother and father. Well, do you know if they were slaves or anything?
Yes.
That your mother and father were?
Yes. You see, Mama was born. Papa was born in 1856, and Mama was born in 1860. And the Negroes were set free in Texas in 1865.
Oh, see, I didn't realize that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's tough. Mm-hmm. So, when you were telling me that your father was a farmer, is that what he did, like, when he was in slavery, when he was a slave?
No, he was a child.
He was just a child.
That was 3 years old.
Papa was 9 when he was separated.
Did he remember, your mother and father remember a lot about that? Until
no, Mama didn't know it.
She didn't know she was a slave
because her mother wasn't a Negro. Mama's mother, his father was Caucasian, and her mother was an Indian. In Danville, Kentucky, they have a tribe of Indians enslaved. Her mother was a slave, but she was full-blooded. And she was born in 1836,
in Danville, Kentucky.
And so her grandmother was a white woman that owned these slaves. She was mother's grandmother, and she kept her in the house with her, and she wouldn't allow anybody to scold her or anything. And she kept until she was 13, and her health began to wane. And she said, Mary Ann, I'm not going to be able to live to rear you like I want. I'm going to send you to Melissa. That was Miss Pope in Fort Worth, Texas. Out in the country. And that was grandmother's half-sister, but she didn't know. See, my mom and mother was like, but Melissa's brother was her father, you see. So they sent her to Texas, and she stayed with them, and she married a man that was brought from Mississippi, Sam Johnson, and he was what they called an anomalic Glasgow. He had straight hair. Oh, he was real, he wasn't black, but he was real dark, and his hair was straight. Now, I don't know how they came. I don't understand what nationality that was. But he was colored with his hair was straight. And he would take it on his finger and curl it back. And then leave that curl and look just like your hair was turned under. And his beard would come down like that. And it was straight. And he had a Roman nose. So I always heard them say he was a Malaglasco. Now what that meant, I don't know. I don't know what race that was. And so Mama's father was half Negro and half Indian. And my father's mother was a Negro and his father was a Caucasian. See, that's, he said the history doesn't tell what happened in slavery between the races, but that's what they did. Those white men would impose on those colored women to bring more children. That's why there's different colors in our race. And some of them would fight for the chastity, but they would overpower and compel and would accept for the approach. But if they found a Negro man advancing on a white woman, they'd lynch him. And that was so inhuman.
Well, what kind of schooling did your mother and father have? Didn't you tell me that they...
My mother and father learned to read in Sunday school.
Sunday school.
At the church.
Would you be kind?
And Papa hired a white man to teach them how to write.
To teach your mother and father?
After they married.
After they got married.
And then, when I was about 12 years old, a school teacher, Mrs. Miss Bell Porter, was a school teacher, and she's rooming with us, and Papa paid her $4 a month to teach him arithmetic. He learned all the tables, addition, multiplication, division.
So then your father was pretty much more educated than most black men at that time.
Oh, there was plenty of black people educated at that time, but he didn't have the opportunity.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. And your classroom, when you were small and everything, was it mostly, well, it was all black students in there, weren't there? They were all in the school,
yes.
And you were taught by black
teachers.
And were they mostly women or men?
Whoever applied for the school and the trustees hired. Now, my first teacher was a woman, Miss Belle Prince. My second teacher was a man, Mr. Santee. I don't know, sometimes they'd apply to the trustees and they'd look at their certificates and decide. See.
But were the trustees black or white?
They were white at first. I see they'd have seven, I believe, and they'd have one or two colored. Mm-hmm. And now where I was, I don't know if that was true everywhere or not, but Papa was a trustee, Mr. Clement was a trustee, John Williams, Saul Clement, Ross Frazier were trustees. And when the trustees would meet in Fort Worth, oh, I guess I was about 8 years old when he first began taking. He made it possible for me to go where something worthwhile. And he never did. I heard them talk about a wagon yard. See, we was in the country. They'd go in a wagon or a hack or a buggy to Fort Worth, and they'd have to put their team, the horses, out somewhere. Said, stopping it up the Sam's wagon yard. I wondered what did that look like. He taken us, it was to a fair, we went in the wagon, and drove in this place called the filthy looking there. There was people in there, white people, cooking on the ground, had a fire and then had a skillet. And here was somebody over here, drinking, great long whiskers. I said, is this Uncle Sam? Well, where is Uncle Sam? He said, you see the old man down on the lawn getting a big old white hat on. He was a couple years. And he was smoking a long pipe. I said, well, I don't want to stay here. He said, I'm not going to keep you here. I'm just going to put my horses up, feed them. And then, you see, I put my wagon here. Nobody can steal it because they'll take care of it. I said, he's that good. He said, I have to pay for it. Then we didn't want to go down the streets in a wagon. He'd have to let us out at the wagon now. And we'd get the streetcar. And the streetcars in Fort Worth then was a little car. I guess it was as long as we had to that door. And little mules were pulling us and had on little bells. Did you ever see one?
No.
And they ride for a nickel. And in 1939, I went to New York to missionary convocation. That's a church organization of women. And the World's Fair was going on. And I went to the World's Fair. And I've seen all that we see now in the world, what they call the world of tomorrow.
Oh, really? It was what's happening?
They showed that in the world of tomorrow. And I've seen these freeways. And I just knew how in the world they're going to build a highway one on top of the other, and you can drive over it, won't break through. But I saw that in the world of tomorrow in 1939 in New York at the World's Fair. And then I know now it must have been airplane. I remember seeing something that was going around up over a mountain. We must have been in a car.
Well, how did you get around then, like from Texas to New York?
I went and you had trains going down.
Oh.
And you had planes going up because the Wright brothers, Negroes, flew the first airplane we ever had. The Wright brothers.
Oh, they were black.
They were two black brothers.
Many things Negroes invented ever that they stole their rights.
Yeah.
They don't claim them. I mean, they didn't claim it all.
Mm-hmm. And Banneker made the first clock.
Mm-hmm.
You see,
I want to ask a question. Have you read Carl G. Woodson's a book on the history of black man?
Mm-hmm. By whose book is that?
Carter G. Woodson, book library. Mm-hmm. And see what you can get on Carter G. Woodson, Negro. But he has a history on the black man.
And it's, I intended to call Miss Cleves and get Cleves's telephone number. Well, he has a bookstore and it's on Negroes here in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. Caldwell Cleves.
Let her ask you a question now.
Oh.
Let her ask you.
Well, that's why she's doing fine. Because a lot of times when she's just, you know, going on, she's answering a whole lot of things.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Well, the questions are just to kind of get her going.
Oh, right? Well, she's going.
She's
going.
Yeah. Okay, let's see. Do you think that a lot of that girls, when you were small, were encouraged to go to school, or were you encouraged more to stay at home and help your mother? So?
Well, I've been told that many were encouraged to stay at home, work in the field,
mm-hmm.
but not where I was raised. Mm-hmm. We all went to school.
Mm-hmm.
And Papa never kept us out to tend the crops and hire hands.
Mm-hmm.
And to think about, they worked all day for 50 cents.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, and he gave them 3 meals a day and 50 cents and a place to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And when come time pick cotton, I was about 8 years old, and the school was out, and I wanted to go to the field with him. And he let me go. And I wanted to plow. He said, you can't plow. I said, the Fraser girls said that Papa lets them plow. And I said, I see some of these white girls plowing. He gave me the plow, put the lines in my hand. Not on the plow on the ground, I said, up to the beam or up to the hills. He said, you'll break my plow. He said, you have to bear down on the panel. I never tried plowing anymore. So he told me, could you just take this hole and cut all the big leaves, you see, so just to drive through.
Mm-hmm.
And I just barged wash me after the fireplace. I was a little young, couldn't I? My name's Mary Magdalene, Papa always called me Mag. He said, Mag. He said, honey, I don't want you to go play across the field. I just want you to take a drive through. Well, I didn't know what that was. He told me to cut the big leaves. And so he cut through a hole, and he said, now you stay in there.
Mm-hmm.
So you walk yourself down.
Mm-hmm.
But the hole, with the hole to cut the weeds and not cut the cotton, if he wanted to go somewhere else and have 5 or 6 men in the field, he said, if you keep up with my lead hand, I could lead them. Of course, I had the advantage. I had 2 holes, and when they stopped to get a drink of water and sharpen their holes, they had to sharpen mine.
Mm-hmm. But you mostly worked in the fields just because you thought it was fun or something, huh?
Yes, yeah, most of
having to. Did you have, you had brothers, didn't you?
My brother next to me died, and I was 5 years older than my next door.
Oh. Well, then, did the boys in your family work in the fields?
Yes.
Did they have to?
Well, it was necessary because they were large enough. They didn't work in the field now when it was time to go to school, so we didn't have 9-month school, 6 months.
Oh, 6 months. Well, do you feel that Well, no.
No, yes, whatever you want.
Okay. Well, the boys went to school, too. Do you feel that your father sent you to school just to be sending you to school, whereas he felt like he had to send the boys to school to kind of...
Oh, he was as interested in his boys as he was his girl.
Yeah, because a lot of times, I don't know, I got the impression that the girls were supposed to stay at home while the boys went to school.
With some parents, that was true. Mm-hmm. We were blessed.
Mm-hmm. Because even now, a lot of fathers don't like girls going to college, you know, and they rather their sons going and go to college, whereas the girls are supposed to stay home and get ready to be wives or whatever. But your father was interested in you getting an education.
And the family. Mm-hmm. And so was my mother.
Mm-hmm. Well, then why did you stop going to school?
To get married.
Oh.
Well, then I didn't stop. I got married, but I continued when I had been married. When I was teaching, and my husband had died, and all my children was out to my
house. Oh. Well, you said that you went to the summer normals. To, what is that? What is that?
Can you explain it better than I can?
At one time, they taught what they call summer normals and institutes. It's something like an institute. Mm. But you see, a person at that time didn't have to go to college. They would go to school in the summer, and that school where they were taught, and that school was called a summer normal. Mm-hmm. That's as far as I can go with summer normal. Mm-hmm.
Did it only take like one summer for them to
no.
go?
No. You had several summers.
Well, then what did you do in the meanwhile, like during the winter? You didn't go to school then? You just...
No, didn't go to school. Some of them did. It was able. The parents was able to send them to a school where they had to pay. It wasn't public school.
Well, then in other words, you couldn't go to a school in the wintertime unless you paid.
Right. They didn't have free schools like you have now. Mm-hmm.
We went in the winter. We just had 6 months.
No, honey, she met after you were married. Didn't you mean that?
No. Well, some teachers that would have night classes. Yeah. Just say the principal of the school and some of his teachers, the public school, mm-hmm. would have night classes. Mm-hmm. Maybe it would be 8 or 10 go to one teacher's home mm-hmm. to improve their education.
Okay. Do you think that there were many opportunities for black women as far as, like, you were a teacher? Do you feel like they would give more jobs to men than to women?
Some people didn't want the children to talk to women.
You didn't have any trouble, though, as far as, you said that you never got to teach, right?
Just two terms.
Oh, well then did you have any trouble getting that job?
No.
You didn't have any trouble?
I take the examination and they said I was competent.
Mm-hmm. Well, there was no discretion or anything shown as far as you being a woman?
They were all Negroes.
Oh, mm-hmm. And you taught at a Negro school?
Country.
Oh. Good.
Good,
yes. And, what professions do you think most black women were in that time? Like, were they all mostly teachers, or was it just...
In the southern states, we didn't have as many different positions for Negroes that they did in the northern states.
Well, when,
you know, there was a division between the north and the south on account of slaves.
Mm-hmm.
Majority of the slaves was a little
amazing. But tell her what jobs were available to women during that time.
Cooking.
Domestic service.
No, domestic service.
For the most part.
Washing,
teaching.
Housekeeping.
Mm-hmm. That's domestic. And teaching. Well, really, teaching was the most outstanding service, I mean, job for women at that time.
And then do you know what the most outstanding profession for, like, men, black men were at this time? Was it teaching also?
Some of them were teachers, yes. The majority of my teachers were men. Yeah. In my day, you see, we're talking from 19 and 20. See, she has, that was just what she asked me back of.
Oh, I didn't come back.
Okay, now when you went to Chickasha, how did you happen to get chosen to go to Chickasha?
My grandmaster. I was a grandmistress, he was a grandmaster. And my ability to get people together and lecture to them what is best for the uplift of fallen humanity.
Well, a grandmaster, did he have the same duties as a grandmistress?
He was over the everybody in the organization.
Well, then, as far as men doing the job that you did they have any that would go around and
yes.
And what were they called? They were grand mistresses too?
Mm-hmm. No, they would be, yeah. Right now, I can't call them.
Well, that's all right. That didn't really, I just wanted to see if they had jobs. Were more, I don't know, like, I got the impression that not many women got chosen for positions where they'd have to move around and everything. It seemed like, were there more men that were given the jobs of
officers?
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Well, not very many women were chosen?
And each of these secret fraternities, they had a password. Mm-hmm. They had a grip. And all the members knew that. And they would, the grandmaster would send men out. Now, this Loyal Friends of America, we were the same. The women had as much authority as the men because in the Grand Lodge, and they'd meet to get the returns from the year's work, how many lodges we set up, how many members. Why? There'd be near 1,000 in the Grand Meeting, and I, as the grandmaster, was called out on a committee or something. He turned the gavel over to me, and I presided over the 500 or 600 or 1,000 persons with the same respect that he got if somebody got unruly. And I asked them, sit down, be seated. They were seated. I had presiding ability at that time.
I think there were more men, though, than women who were in leadership capacity. Mm-hmm. That's what he was asking. Were there more women than men, or more men than women?
More men.
There were more men.
Mm-hmm.
But though, you see, my mother, along with other women who had that kind of ability,
mm-hmm.
were fortunate
mm-hmm.
in being.
Well, do you think that you're not being married at this time? You weren't married when you were selected as a grand mistress to go to Chickasha, were you?
No, I was a widow.
You were a widow?
I'd lost my husband at 25.
Mm-hmm. Well, then do you think that that had any bearing as far as the man that picked you to go, as far as you not being married or anything? Because now...
Yes, my responsibility. He felt like I wasn't bound to a husband mm-hmm. that I had to be there to see that mm-hmm. his necessities were met.
Mm-hmm. Well, then after you married Reverend Hughes?
No, after I married Mr. Holloway.
But when you went to, when you were a grand mistress in Chickasha, and then you married, you said that you came back to to Texas, and then you married Reverend Hughes, and you went back?
No, Reverend Hughes was my first husband.
Oh.
He's the father of all my children.
Oh, well, then that's when
we traveled from place to place. As an Methodist, we have bishops. And when the conference meets and all the ministers in that diocese, not in that diocese, but in that conference, meet and a bishop assigns them, says, it's assigned your husband to, gave me the name of Ventura, a church there, and her husband to somewhere else in the city. And 12 months we meet in a conference again. Now you see, I traveled with my first and their father. My first husband, I was just 18. But in 1906, we were in Bisbee, Arizona, setting up, organizing a church
before the Cullen Methodist Episcopal Church, there was Baptist Church. That's different. Catholic Church is a different denomination, but for our denomination, and I traveled with him from place to place. And then, as I said, I done missionary work, and I traveled with the missionaries to make our report yearly. See, and you asked me how I went to New York. I went from Oklahoma City to New York on the American bus line. It started in San Francisco, going to the World's Fair, and they only carried people who were going to New York. Mm-hmm. And a small bus, 28 of us. And it wasn't segregated.
It wasn't segregated?
Mm-hmm.
Well then, okay, after you married Reverend Holloway?
He was a regular man. He wasn't.
Oh, he wasn't a reverend? Oh, okay. After you married Mr. Holloway then, did you stop
no.
being a grand mistress? Do you continue being a grand mistress?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, but did you still travel around a lot?
Yes.
Oh, well then, even being married, you still got to get?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Marcus Garvey, were...
Yeah, he was the man that was trying to get the Negroes together to take them back there.
Well, then, weren't you involved in the NAACP?
Mm-hmm.
And they were taking on just the opposite view.
Mm-hmm.
They, as Marcus Garvey. Now, were you involved in NAACP at that time?
Mm-hmm.
At that time, let's see. Well, then you don't agree with Marcus Garvey, then.
Mm-hmm. I didn't.
No,
you
didn't. Okay. Let's see. When I was looking up information, you know, to try and interview you on, I noticed that there were a lot of men speakers, I mean black men speakers, that had more of an impact as far as getting the black people aroused or whatever, even Marcus Garvey, even